Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Are you troubled by stale podcasts in the middle of the night?
Do you love films that feature the busting of spooks, specters, or ghosts?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute.
Ghostbusters Resurrection is an RPG audio drama combining tabletop gaming and cinematic paranormal elimination adventures.
Call the professionals at nerdyshow.com/ghostbusters.
We're ready to believe you.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
I'm driving a car.
Yep.
I'm Tony.
We're inside of a car right now. We're on our way back from North Carolina Comic-Con, Bull City in Durham, North Carolina. And, well, it turns out this is one of the weeks where we release Nerdy Show, so we figured what better time than when we are all a captive audience ourselves in a car where, statistically speaking, you have a good chance of being, and we'll just kind of create this sort of a car inception experience for you and, you know, do our usual Nerdy Show discussions as well as share some memories from this recent convention we were at.
Yo, dog, I heard you like podcasts in your car. So we put this podcast in a car to put it into a podcast that you can put in your car.
Yep, that just about dugs it.
God.
Oh, what a terrible start already. All right, so North Carolina Comic Con is a wonderful pop culture convention, modest in scale, but big in talent. And it happens twice a year, once in Raleigh, which is Oak City and is in the spring, and once in Durham, which is in the fall. And in this case, in the Durham show, it's a very unique setup where it takes place in the convention center, which is attached to a hotel, which is attached directly to a movie theater that is also attached to a historic stage performance style theater, across the street from which is a building called the Armory, which is like basically an old-timey venue for kids.
Sock hops.
Yeah, all that sort of shit. So there's a lot of mixed-use venue spaces, and it's really incredible. They're able to have a film festival simultaneous to the convention, and then a big dance party at night and all kinds of other things. So we were there tabling in Artist's Alley for Lightning Dogs, our animated series about a pack of anthropomorphic dogs from another world trapped in post-apocalyptic Earth battling mutants, miscreants, and the evil glampire. Go to lightningdogs.com for more information. You can tell we've said it a lot.
Yeah.
Hopefully by now you're familiar with the project, and if not, well, I wish I said it slower, but just go to lightningdogs.com.
Check us out. We're cool.
Yeah.
Hashtag pound sign hell noise. Yeah, we tabled next to Becky Cloonan, Ben Bishop, John Layman was right behind us.
Afua Richardson. And Jim Mahfood. Honestly, it was the greatest intersection I've ever been intersecting with of any convention ever. And just down the same row as us was Chris Sims and Chad Bowers.
Mike Perkins.
Oh, just fantastic. And there was, in terms of the caliber of guests, to give you a sense of like really what they're working with here, Gerard Way, the front person for My Chemical Romance, who also these days most prominently writes kick-ass comic books like Doom Patrol for DC, was there. Chuck Palahniuk, the guy who wrote Fight Club, and a bunch of other things you probably heard of, was there.
Awesome, just A-list fucking talent.
Yeah, and cool dealers' rooms, and so on and so forth. But it's a very fan-focused, activity-driven convention that's a lot of fun. I guess if you love comic conventions at all, and you're like, I fucking hate these big shows that are just like warehouses where I pay money to spend money on a bunch of crap that...
You could probably get it online if you looked hard enough.
Yeah, then you should come out to a show like this, or perhaps specifically this show, because you'll get an intimate experience that's like the comic conventions of old, but spiced up with more than enough of the new and a bunch of experiences you wouldn't have otherwise. So the guys tabled the booth, and I did a bunch of panels and visited occasionally, and I'm sorry, folks, for how gone I was. It was even more than I realized it was going to be.
As long as you're out there and people are liking you, and you're name-dropping Lightning Dogs at some point, we were fine with it.
Yeah, I mean...
And I'm sure you'll be fine with all the executive decisions that Doug and I made regarding Lightning Dogs that we were able to push through with a two-thirds majority. Fucking highlight of the con, pop culture-wise, aside from just hanging out with people and getting a chance to talk to, you know, rub elbows with industry professionals who I feel like otherwise would just sneeze at me, primarily because I prompt a lot of allergies to bad jokes, was watching Willow on his 30th anniversary on the big screen. Getting the opportunity to see Willow in a theater with an audience is something that I had never had, and Willow has a very special place in my childhood, because it was one of those movies that my parents had that we would just watch all the time. So to see it, to hear the score, to be able to identify weird tricks of the special effects that don't quite hold up. Like, a lot of the matte backgrounds and the incorporation there is still great, but, like, when Finn Rizzell is a crow, you can definitely see that they green-screened in the flap of the lower beak in a couple of shots.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, okay, so...
You take particular umbrage with the goat?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Finn Rizzell, the goat, who is clearly eating food the whole time. And also, every time that they have a fake Elora Dannon on the big screen, you can really tell. But at this point, I've seen Willow on the big screen twice in his 30th anniversary year, and every time I see something new and different, and it is spectacular. All weird aged effects, nitpicks aside, it is wonderful, and we were thrilled to be a part of that 30th anniversary celebration. We had been trying to do something via our other podcast, our Star Wars podcast, State of the Empire, and our spinoff, Willow Watch, for a very long time now, and this was the culmination of that entire endeavor.
Everything that Capitone said. Because especially with what Tony said, it was one of the highlights of the trip. I laughed, almost cried. It was great. 10 out of 10. Would do again.
Before the film, we were able to offer an expanded edition sort of prelude to things to tell people all kinds of stories from behind the scenes and beyond the scope of the movie about Willow, the way Willow was marketed, all the merchandising tie-ins, other aspects of the stories that people mostly don't know. Adapting all the incredible things we've learned in our years doing our Willow Watch series. You can go to willowwatch.com and get a lot of that information for yourself, but it was really cool doing it in a live setting, and I hope we're able to do it again even beyond the 30th anniversary year. I think we have a really nice presentation that's worth doing again.
Just the entire experience. The folks who put on NC Comic Con are great. We love you all.
I was on a horror panel where we just discussed the genre at large. I was there with Jeremy Whitley, the author of Unstoppable Wasp, Princeless, and specifically the reason he was on there was a recent run on Vampirella that's quite different from the cheesecake origins of that character. Also, Chris Ryle, who is one of the big, big figures in IDW Comics until very recently. He just moved over to Robert Kirkman's Skybound label. He is the dude who basically made Lock and Key happen. Communicated, you know, with Joe Hill before he really had anything to do with comics, and they talked about potential stories that maybe he could write, and he said, yeah, I like the one with the keys in the house. So, you know, IDW actually used to, when they started, they were doing more horror than anything. They secured the Silent Hill license. That was one of the first IDW comics I ever bought, was a Silent Hill comic.
And Lock and Key is straight up one of the, not even just best horror comics, best fucking comics I've read in ages.
Yeah, it's one of the best finite comic stories ever done, ever. Ever, ever. And if you're a Stephen King fan, it is absolutely a must.
It is tragic, it is beautiful, it is poignant.
It's amazing how much Joe Hill's work is cut from the same cloth as his father's work, while still being a very fresh and unique voice in his own right. It's a very special thing. And then there's me, repping Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program.
It was a rare occasion for you on a con like this where you were on a panel as opposed to hosting a panel.
Yeah, I like it. I like doing that instead. I mean, I like hosting just fine. But it was a treat. That was one of two times that happened. I was also on a queer comics panel, which was a lot of fun. Just talking about representations of queerness in the medium, pros and cons, where it's headed, where representation is headed in the comics medium. And great discussions all around, very interactive with our audience. It was a real delight. I also did a one-on-one discussion for a panel with Ben Bishop, Ninja Turtles artist who's done a lot of collaboration with Kevin Eastman lately, including a forthcoming, like coming out very soon, comic called Drawing Blood, which is a fictionalized account of Kevin Eastman's life. If you've heard some of the archived panels from North Carolina Comic Con Oak City, then you'll already know this story because Kevin Eastman was there and I did some panels with him. But it's like, what if Kevin Eastman didn't create the Ninja Turtles? This other guy created the radically rearranged Ronin Ragdolls, who are three cats named after famous anime directors. And
hold on, that sounds amazing.
And then it's this weird scathing send up to the comic book industry and the success of it. And there's like a parody of Michael Bay in it, and like hallucinations about this dude's creations. And I haven't read it yet, but I've flipped through it. It sounds fascinating. So that was a very successful Kickstarter. Kickstarter backers are getting their issues soon, and otherwise, it's getting broken up in, I think, four issues that'll be available in comic stores and collected for the direct market soon. There's also a standalone issue of Radically Rearranged Ronin Ragdolls.
I want all of this. I really do.
It looks amazing, and Ben's art is fantastic. I also did a one-on-one panel with Rob Venditti, who's author of many, many great comics, including Exo Manowar, The Surrogates.
Long-time friend of the show.
Green Lantern. Yeah, he's been on the show a few times. And most recently, he absolutely dazzled me with his run on Hawkman, who is a character that I don't give a fuck about. Massive figure in the Justice League and, you know, seems to always, you know, always be a touchstone of that team, but is so very seldom been handled well or interestingly at all. I've given Hawkman many shots and come up with absolutely nothing to show for my efforts except wasted time. But Rob's Hawkman embraces all the convoluted continuity and streamlines it into a tale that fills time and space as this man, Carter Hall, Hawkman, realizes that all these past lives he's lived are occurring at different points in history and are all part of some big tapestry that's warning him of something coming. And you don't have to know anything about Hawkman. And that's what's so, it both indulges all this convoluted continuity, but then puts it together in a way that's new and fresh and absolutely accessible to anyone who's even moderately curious about this character, or even just wants to read a really great science fantasy story about past and present and future lives.
That sounds like everything I could ever hope for about a story about a man with a mace and wings.
Yeah.
Yep, that's about it.
More than what you're expecting, for sure.
He Jeff Johns did.
He did Jeff Johns it. He Jeff Johns with the best of them. I mean, he was Jeff Johns hand-picked Rob Venditti to follow up his legendary run on Green Lantern. Rob replaced him for like 80-some-odd issues,
and
it was fantastic.
Great. No, it was beautiful. Rob absolutely picked up the ball and ran with it, and it was, characters were still, the voice was close enough that it wasn't like a tonal shift, but it was new stories, it was fresh stories, and it was great. It was great to get to hang out with him. I know I wasn't on the panel, but it was great to get to hang out with him while we were at the con. I'm still just kind of basking in it.
Yeah, it's a great show for like, that breaks down the barriers between creators and fans. You know, you could throw up the barriers if you want, but you could also lower them. I also hosted the gala, the big dance party, which I've done several years in the past. But this was the best one ever. It really, really was. The folks who came out for it, all in costume or mostly in costume, were just dancing their hearts out enough that I took a real risk. I was up there. I was emceeing. There was a DJ Fifi, and I had this crazy idea. You know, we had a stage of a good height, and I've never crowd surfed before, and I've always kind of been curious about what the fuck that would feel like. And you know, even in the handful of clubs that I've been in where that was even conceivably possible, I'd had something with me like, you know, a purse or like pockets with shit in it, you know, and I haven't known what to do about that. You gotta be ready to lose everything you've got, you know, if you're crowd surfing. But in this case, I was like, you know, this is a really safe, controlled environment. Is it possible? Could I do this? And I asked everybody, hey, could you help me out with this crazy idea? Let's see if it would work. They all got real close to the stage, and Fifi put on Smells Like Teen Spirit, and I leapt backwards and and thousands of hands. Well, not thousands, but it felt like thousands.
It might as well have been, Captain.
Who knows? I wasn't looking at them. They were on. They escorted me for what felt like forever until gently putting me down. It was so amazing, and what an incredible crowd to indulge that absurdity. It was absolutely wonderful. It was a great night.
So were you like airborne for a second, or did you like just fall flat to backwards?
I mean, I leapt backwards.
Wow. You're living the dream.
Yeah, someone told me, like, you're living your best life. And I was like, kind of, yeah, you know, it's hard. It's really fucking hard to argue. I mean, I'm not a planner, but I sort of see what would feel right or good, where that would be, and just put myself out there. And that's, you know, that's why I have such a long relationship with North Carolina Comic Con. I started going to these shows with Aaron, and the people who put it on liked me and invited me to do some presentation, and that just kept growing and growing and growing. And it's useful to them for me to be there. I take care of some problems they don't want to deal with. But also, I get to do cool shit like that because I have a random idea and I don't say no to it. I say yes to it, or how can I do this? And as a result, I have a really good time. So, you know, hey, if you ever want more out of life, just
go crowd surfing.
Yeah, just go crowd surfing.
That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
What Cap is saying is go back and watch the Jim Carrey film Yes Man, and then turn it off after about 40 minutes before he realizes that he doesn't have to say yes to everything, and then just say yes to everything.
I didn't even remember that movie was the thing that happened.
It was, and it wasn't terrible. It was actually kind of fun in Jim Carrey. It's the closest Jim Carrey has been to, like, a liar type situation in forever.
It sounds very similar.
Well, it was directed by the same guy.
Ah. Well, you guys got any other Comic-Con memories worthy of sharing?
Other than watching some terrible movies on purpose. That was a lot of fun. It's sort of, I don't want to say it broadens your horizons, but it's like a palate cleanser, so you can enjoy the good stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. If ever you want to be able to enjoy a good fugitive movie, watch a bad fugitive movie.
Yeah.
Oh, can you, okay, so after I was out doing this gala, I come back, and at nighttime, the staff and guests get together and drink a bunch of booze and watch some bad movies, and it's like, it just adds to the homie environment that makes this Comic-Con so very, very great.
Yeah, homie.
But I got in late on account of the gala, and I missed a movie.
It was called Fugitive X, Innocent Target. It was directed, written, starring,
and theme song sung by
a gentleman named David Heavener. I believe it's pronounced Heavener. That's how it's spelled.
Heavener, yeah.
And
Heavener.
Heavener.
It's like a mixture of early Quentin Tarantino. This guy, he just makes movies starring himself. Everything's a vanity project, and it's like an excuse to look at boobs
He is apparently like a hardcore Christian.
Yes, and all of it is an excuse to just indulge in these non-Christian activities.
Things,
yeah,
but it's like the people who engage in the hedonistic behavior that he gets to bear witness to
and punish
always wind up having bad things happen to them. But this movie is about
Well, hold on. Here's how I found out about this film, and that's we're going to sleep in the hotel room. The lights are completely out.
We're all like,
and you start fucking bedtime storying me.
Well,
this whole insane
Doug laughed. Doug just started giggling out of nowhere.
because the movie was so stupid. I couldn't stop thinking about it.
It was the best kind of bad movie, because it's for those of you who are film students who have like are familiar with the but and therefore method of storytelling, which is where a character wants something, but this happens. Therefore, they have to do this. But therefore.
And if your story is just a bunch of, and then this happens, and then they meet this person, and then this happens, and then they have to run, and it's like, that's just bad.
It's boring, just, yeah. Because nothing, there's no motivation.
There's no connectivity.
There's nothing to overcome. This is a movie where things happen. And at the risk of running, because it took us a good, like, 40 minutes to run through it, and we don't need to do that, so we'll do, like, the highlights of it, which is that there is a guy, David Heavener plays a ex-cop whose daughter was killed in a car crash, whose wife is paralyzed, who is now working at, like, some kind of tech company, who is drugged and kidnapped and made to be part of a most dangerous game situation, where people are taking bets as to how long he will survive.
Yeah, they pick a random civilian, and they give them a gun and set them loose on the streets of L.A., and they send a team, a squad.
Could be L.A. We're not actually sure.
Yeah, we're not actually sure. They never say for sure, but it looks like L.A. And they send a hit squad after them and see how long they can survive. And every hour, the bets increase and the odds go up and, you know, and whatever.
The house loses money and the people who have, like, bet to see how long they'll survive gain more.
Yeah.
That's the setup. You know, it sounds like a cool setup. It is not well executed in any way, shape, or form.
It's 12 hours in the life of this guy running for his life.
And it feels like 36 as you're watching it.
Yeah, it's just one crazy scene that leads into the next with very little connecting it,
Doug says that they're crazy scenes, but it's not crazy as in something crazy happened.
Yeah, not like, oh my
god. It's crazy as in, how the fuck did somebody think that this was the way to shoot this scene?
Yeah, or like, what does this have to do with everything we saw previous? There's nothing in common.
The person who is responsible for setting him on this path to begin with, he goes into a limousine, and in the limousine is a bunch of prunes. We know there are a bunch of prunes in there because the person who
calls the limousine, the big bad guy.
The big bad guy calls the limousine, tells him the prunes are there, and says that will help. What was it, Doug?
It's like they're good for the bowels, and it will help your stool.
And for the rest of the movie, anytime he's talking to anybody,
every time the big bat picks up the phone, immediately says, has he made yet?
How
is his stool doing? Because
how many nugs?
It never comes up again.
But it did. It was there.
Yeah.
But things that happened throughout the course, again, that I'm just going to like run through bullet points. Hobo with a grenade launcher.
Not as cool as it sounds.
The slow motion jumps for 3-foot gaps.
About as lame as it sounds.
A tuxedo ruined by garbage for no reason. Police officers that give up on looking for a suspect because garbage smells bad.
Yeah, he dives into a dumpster.
Coming up next?
Oh, yeah.
Hold on. What I wish you guys had done is I wish you told them a bedtime story like you told me a bedtime story, because you can list as many things as you want, and that'll be perfectly great. But when you really cut into the scenes and this absurd sequence of events that you unleashed on me, it's just not the same if you're just listening.
It's
so please,
maddening.
Please,
at least,
explain
at least
the dumpster sequence.
The dumpster sequence. He runs into an alley, pursued by two police officers that have never in their life taken a gun safety class.
And now he's ducked down an alley. They've lost line of sight on him, but they know he's in the alley. At the end of the alley is a dumpster. He climbs into said dumpster. The cops run into the alley. There's nowhere else to hide.
Except the dumpster.
Yeah, so they approach the dumpster, guns drawn. They lift the lid of the dumpster and immediately make faces of disgust. And we thought, oh my God, is there a body in there? Did he kill himself? What's going on? And then they walk away waving their faces as if they're smelling shit.
Stinky.
And it's like the garbage smelled so bad, they walked away. And this didn't even report in that a suspect is loose or anything.
And then 2 seconds later, he hops out of the fucking dumpster.
Yeah.
Because as it turns out, that's where he was hiding.
Of course.
And then runs into the chin of justice himself, Robert Zadar.
A completely unrelated plot thread.
What will people know Robert Zadar from?
From a number of different things. He's been in so many bad movies. People would know his chin if they saw it. He was in, actually, Hell Comes to Frogtown 2.
Two as in also, or two as in the sequel?
Two as in the sequel. He plays the Rowdy Roddy Piper role.
Wow. All right.
It is still not worth watching.
So, wait, did he... So he plays Sam Hell?
Yes.
Fuck me.
So he was also in Tango and Cash, Samurai Cop, Maniac Cop, Cherry 2000, Maniac Cop 2 and 3.
If you guys have watched...
Psycho Cop, Unhinged Cop.
If you watch Red Letter Media, Robert Zadar has shown up in a number of things. Robert Zadar, like, knocks him out, picks him up, and takes him back to a flower shop. But it's not actually a flower shop.
Well, it is a flower shop on top, but like behind the scenes.
It is a scene where it is behind the scenes.
It's a sex dungeon.
that is run by French Mario.
As in Mario Mario or Luigi Mario?
As in Mario Mario.
As in Mario Le Mario. And we know he's French Mario because he's got a Mario mustache, suspenders, a red bow tie, and a fucking beret.
Red beret?
Black beret.
It was a black beret?
It was a black beret.
Was it a raspberry? Raspberry beret? We'll split the difference.
Okay, I'll go with the kind you find at a secondhand store.
Exactly. He watched the gimp scene from Pulp Fiction and said, I want to do that, but instead of it being gay, I want it to be a sexy lady in a dominatrix outfit.
Or instead of it being even remotely threatening by having the gimp be somebody you never completely understand,
right,
just exists. I'm going to put Robert Zadar in a balaclava after we've seen his face.
Yeah.
And after the hero has seen his face. And then have him take it on and off like four or five times while our hero is chained up to an X with a wheel. It looks like they had rotated him around a couple of times.
It was the way for him to make this movie so he could experience this aspect of his life that he wanted to explore, and then we have to witness it on film. And then there's the plausible deniability where like, no, it was just for a movie.
My understanding is all the while he's wagging his finger at it and getting it horribly wrong, entire subculture.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Pretty much. So back to bullet list, there is a dog with a vial of blood around its neck.
The dog's okay, the dog lives.
Dog lives. There is a pointless lesbian subplot that goes nowhere.
Oh, there was a point, just not to the plot.
Fair play. And my understanding was that the point was so he could turn a gay woman straight.
Yeah, because he wasn't even interested in her, like, romantically. He just had such a sad story that he had to tell her about his life, and she felt so bad for betraying his trust that he turned her straight.
And also, based on him just being there, got her partner killed.
Yeah, her girlfriend was shot in the face.
Yeah, so like, hey, great doubleheader bullshit that straight people put on gay characters in film. Thanks, dude.
There was a dune buggy chase.
Yeah.
Where I'm pretty sure that
it jumped a skateboard ramp that was maybe 2 feet off the ground.
There was a Western shootout in a medieval castle.
Yeah. Quite literally, the main villain is like, all right, here's your chance. Tosses him a six-shooter.
And they have a good old-fashioned draw in a medieval castle.
In a castle, yeah.
In the middle of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
For no fucking reason.
Yeah, so rent it for a fun time, you know?
or pirate it.
I
don't know how you watch this thing. It seems borderline impossible, but it sounds like an amazing time if you have a thirst for a terrible film with extremely questionable motives.
It is 40 minutes of sheer entertainment. Unfortunately,
the movie's an hour and a half.
Because by the end of it, we were all just kind of like, is it over?
Like, it felt like it would never end.
Is it over?
When you were telling me about it late at night, I was shocked by how the conversation kept going. But I was never exhausted with it. I was just like, this is like some kind of lucid dream. Yeah. None of these pieces fit together.
Oh, worth mentioning, the way he gets drugged and kidnapped is that at an office.
It's his birthday. It's his birthday. He goes to work. He's in a suit. He's in a tux.
Tuxedo.
Because they're going to be filming him today for a commercial for his business.
Which is never really explained.
It's not even his business. He just works there. But he shows up. He's at work. He's in his cubicle.
He's about to start typing on his computer, which is not turned on.
Yeah, his jerk co-worker, who's leering at every lady in the office.
Hubba, hubba.
Is just chatting with him. And then all of a sudden you hear them singing,
happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday.
Oh. I think, because they can't sing the happy birthday song. And if I'm trying to be fair, I think what they were singing as they were clapping was, happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday, boy. Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday, boy. And
Do that at your next birthday celebration.
Yeah. And then they wheel in a giant cake that's really not a cake.
No, they don't wheel it in. They fucking carry it.
They carried
it in. They had four people carry this cake in, and it's clearly not a cake. And I'm sitting there watching it
who's popping out?
Somebody's about to...
I thought there'd be like, oh, yes, an assassin pops out of the cake or some shit.
Nope. Fucking a stripper pops out. And it's in the middle of an office in corporate America, the women are sitting there
watching. There were more women than men in that office. And they were all standing around of all ages. And they were all dressed like normal people. And they're clapping along and laughing as this stripper literally starts to get naked in the middle of the office, in the middle of the day, and starts grinding on our hero.
I mean, I wish we had that kind of sex positivity, though. I do think that that's generally an exploitive kind of...
Even like this is an office filled with scumbags. You know, we're shown that his friend at the office is
like maybe the scumbag. He's like the scumbag.
But what you're describing is a bunch of things that don't make sense. A situation conceived of from the mind of this very repressed and insane person who made this film.
Yeah. I guess, you know how like Twilight is often criticized as being like, oh, it's about all the... there's subtext here about how you're so repressed. This is like the escape, you know, like sexually, but it's mixed with the fantasy of the monsters.
Uh-huh.
This is the male fantasy version of that, where women are constantly throwing themselves at you, even lesbians, and you are someone that everybody is after, but you're an unstoppable killing machine, and it's that power fantasy of, like, I'm not a spy, I'm just a regular guy, but I could he's like a regular guy, though. He's not super cop. He's just like, I'm just a regular Joe who's had a hard time, and now he can fucking kill, like, Rambo. Like,
I don't know if that's true, because I feel like there was some stuff where they were talking about how good a cop he was,
true.
How the force misses him. However, you're not wrong, because this motherfucker, stormtroopers have better aim than the people who are chasing him.
Yeah, not even exaggerating.
He doesn't run so much as he has a brisk jog as he's trying to get from A to B.
He's got a right and direct. He doesn't want to tucker himself out too much.
His one combat move is a half-hearted roundhouse kick that he uses ad nauseum.
If you haven't figured out by now, we had a great time.
To the point where we did legitimately cap up an additional 45 minutes just
retelling every little nuance that we could think of or remember.
Wouldn't trade it for the world. Slept like a baby.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So in a moment, we'll talk about stuff other than what we did at North Carolina Comic Con. But in the meantime, I just want to point out that this program and all the shows on the Nerdy Show Network are entirely listener-supported. If it's not for you folks...
don't exist.
Yeah, and like caring about what we do, we would definitely not be here. I want to point out that if you haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, please do check out the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program at CthulhuMystery.com. or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wherever podcasts are sold.
It has been a massive, massive labor of love. We now have 2 episodes out. There's more to come. In fact, the series is actually a bit longer than I realized it was going to be. We're looking at maybe 8 or 9 episodes in total, releasing every other week. So that's through to January, for those of you keeping track. It's been an absolute joy to produce this series, and it's been quite complicated, and your funding via Patreon has entirely made this possible. It has cost hundreds of dollars to put this together. I don't have a final total yet because we're still spending money on it, and we're very, very grateful. It's extremely fulfilling to make something like this, and we know that a great many of you wanted us to return to the series, and we're happy to make it happen. And if you want to see more Call of Cthulhu, and if you'd like it to come out faster, the more resources we have, the better. So if you can support us at any amount, even a dollar, it makes a huge difference. Also, at North Carolina Comic Con, I recorded a lot of these panels. I don't know what they sound like yet. I might release some of them as episodes, but I might also release some of them just as Patreon perks. And if I do, then you'll probably be getting those at the $5 or more Patreon tier. So stay tuned for that. Please do rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. On Podchaser, you can review this specific episode if you want to. And there are definitely some people we should give shout-outs to, but I don't have any of that information in front of me right now as we are in a car. So thank you in advance, and we will definitely read your names, new patrons, in our following episode of Nerdy Show coming out in 2 weeks. And for all of you who rate and review us on any platform, we'll be keeping an eye out, and we'll read your reviews on our next episode.
Hey, I want to give a shout-out to Gene Simmons. Gene Simmons in the movie Never Too Young to Die. Doing God's work, friend. Doing God's work.
I don't know what God you're talking about.
Neither do I. Yeah. It was perfect.
Betamax, God of Shitty Movies.
That's the one.
Betamax, yeah. Perfect.
Doug, what have you been up to outside of this experience at North Carolina Comic Con?
I have, for a long time, I've had a list of films that I've been wanting to see. A lot of them are considered older classic films, some newer classic stuff. I'm trying to catch up on that and a lot of TV, but I don't want to spend half my life in front of a TV because I spend most of my working days in front of a computer screen. But I've been renewed efforts into trying to see some classic stuff before it leaves Netflix or disappears entirely. I saw The Endless Summer for the first time. Have any of you seen The Endless Summer?
Yeah, and Endless Summer 2.
I haven't seen Endless Summer 2, but I want to see it now because of the first one.
It's not as good as the first one, by a long shot.
But I had no idea going into it what the movie was. I knew the premise. Two surfers decide to cross the equator to experience an endless summer and find the perfect wave. That's the tagline for the thing, and that's all I knew about the movie. I had no idea it was a documentary.
Whoa. Okay,
So the movie starts, and it's a documentary, and there's just narration the entire time from the filmmaker who followed these surfers and surfed with them. And I'm wondering, when is this opening narration going to stop? And when's the narrative story going to kick in? And it didn't. It was fine. I enjoyed it very much. But
at the same time, it's like when you order eggs and you're expecting them to come out scrambled, and instead you get an egg in the face.
Or a boiled egg. Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay. When are you going to cook it? Oh, it is cooked. Oh, okay. I can begin eating now, I guess. But the thing that
was that analogy, Tony?
the thing that I loved reading about it afterwards was that while I was watching it, I was just thinking, this is almost like watching someone's home movies back in the 60s. Like, we went on a crazy vacation. Let's tell you all about it. Except it wasn't annoying and the music was better. but then I come to find out that's exactly what it was. When they filmed this, it was just them. There's no sound. It's just them doing a home movies. It's them goofing around in between. Like, in between they go to surf spots. It's them goofing around town, just kids with a movie camera. And what they did was, when they finally went around the world and they filmed in all these wonderful locations, and they took the film on a tour to, high school gymnasiums and any other art house cinema places that would show it. And they would talk about it. The narrator of the movie would narrate the entire film live.
Whoa,
with surf
music.
With surf music playing on record players, and they would just improvise the stories, like retelling it every single time. And they said, and they did it for a year and a half, and then they were like, "This is so good. Why don't you guys just record, the narration once, and then release it in theaters?" And that's what they did.
Documentary history is made.
Exactly. So that was really good. It was a lot of fun. I didn't know anything about surfing, and I've seen movies with surfing as a major component, but they never go into, dare I say, the science of surfing, what makes a wave worth riding, and what's considered a good wave and shit. I don't know. Maybe it's obvious to everyone else, but it was a world that I knew nothing about, and it was really interesting.
And then peaked in the movie Surf's Up, starring Shia LaBeouf as a penguin.
Surf's Up is great. The score to Surf's Up is one of the best scores of that entire decade.
I'm not knocking the movie at all. I actually really like it.
Okay, yeah, Surf's Up rules.
It's also one of the first animated roles that Jeff Bridges ever did.
Other than that, I watched this Orson Welles movie that I'd never heard of called The Stranger. It was released a year or two. I think it's 2 years after World War II ended, and it's about a Nazi, a terrible, terrible Nazi who escaped the Nuremberg trials
and has started living a life in America, and he's dating the daughter of a Supreme Court justice member, and he's got plans to use that power to infiltrate the United States and start another war.
I don't like this. It's too real. Please stop.
I know. And, like, so there's parts of it that was like, man, this is kind of topical. But it's Orson Welles playing the villain, and he directed it. And it's a surprising little movie that I hadn't heard of. And I'm scared that once it's no longer on Netflix or any other streaming service, the world's going to forget about it. Because
how's anybody going to forget about an Orson Welles film? I mean, like, is there really a legitimate threat of that somehow?
I don't know, because just because I'd never heard of it doesn't mean that it wasn't known.
I mean, I've heard of it. I didn't know the plot, but I've heard of it.
But
that does actually speak to something that's kind of interesting, which is the impermanence that streaming platforms offer.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing that, for us in this car, the movies that we know, the movies that we grew up on, and maybe those that cultivated our passion for them, you know, there was a shelf somewhere that had all these movies.
Yeah.
We could go back to them as much as we wanted. And it's like now, if these were movies that our parents borrowed, and then their friends would come and take them back.
At random times.
And it's just like, well, can I watch All Dogs Go to Heaven? Nah, Uncle Johnny brought that, had to take that home. And it's like, but I want to watch it.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons I still go out and buy movies.
Ownership has purpose. It's not just hoarding.
Like, but have you ever even seen...
There is a hoarding aspect to it, but yeah, go ahead.
But have you ever even seen The Stranger on DVD or Blu-ray anywhere?
I haven't, but I also haven't looked for it.
Yeah, right. I haven't looked for it either, but I mean, like, for example, I mean, if we're gonna broaden the horizons of this conversation, Filmstruck just got axed by the parent company that owned it, was operating it. Filmstruck was a streaming film service for cinephiles. It had all of TCM's catalog, which is extremely expansive. It includes remasters done for television of material that was not necessarily worthy for, you know, popular consumption and having DVD or Blu-ray releases. So lots of rare shit that was highly exclusive was on there, in addition to the entirety of the Criterion Collection.
And I'll say for anyone, because I was so close.
It's the only streaming service I've ever really wanted.
I was so close to getting it myself, but I was waiting a little bit longer to see if they would release a PlayStation 4 app so I would go directly to my TV.
And the only reason I didn't do it is because I have no time to enjoy it.
Yeah.
It also begs the question, you know, if this is where these films are sourced, who is deciding what gets to stay and what gets or what needs to leave? And how is that going to color what we even think of as being classic film?
Well, though, admittedly,
or culture.
We know now, what we know now about streaming services is only what we know now. The experience of experiencing films, the mediums through which they're distributed, will continue to change at a rapid pace. And more and more things will, like, slip into public domain, and the nature of experiencing movies could become completely different in ways that we could not predict ourselves. And I think that's highly likely, because information is valuable, and because if progress from the internet itself and the way people interface the internet continues unimpeded, then curation from individuals is one of the core facets of what people do on the internet.
So I'll say a little bit of light at the end of this tunnel. For anyone who was thinking about getting Filmstruck, or maybe you didn't even know about it, but you think that's really up your alley and you may be bummed to hear that it's going away, there is an alternative. It's not as good, but it's definitely good enough.
And now it's the only game in town.
It's the only game in town. There's an app and a service called Canopy, but it's Canopy with a K. And the only way that the only thing you need to do to get it, it's a free app. All you need is a library card to your local library. So either go down to your local library and get a library card.
Which you should do anyway. Books and knowledge is power.
I didn't even have to go down to my local library to get my library card, because you can fill out a form online and they'll mail you a library card to your home. So do that. When you get your library card, download the app called Canopy with a K. You type in your library card information, and it will stream movies that your local library has. And it's often filled with Criterion films and with a heavy slant on international films.
Hell yeah.
And there's a lot of kids' films in there too, because kids, you know, they want to have stuff for the kids in the library. But there's a great selection, and they're adding new stuff all the time, but it's gonna depend on where your local library is. It's not literally like the library down the street. It's like the county or state that you live in will have a specified list.
But it's a national service in theory.
Yes,
like,
at least for North America.
Right.
And the only downside is that, well, you can watch it on your phone or you can watch it on your computer. I don't think there's an app for any other, like, TV, smart TV or anything just yet, but it's free. Like, there's no monthly fee. So it's just you're using your library's library. Like, you're using all the films that you would see in your local library, but you don't even have to get off your couch to see it.
That is...
Just be sure to return the movies before the due date. Those fees can add up quick.
You don't even have to rewind it.
Be kind anyway.
This is an incredible... I'm hesitant to use the term life hack, but I've never heard of this before, and it sounds fucking amazing.
Yeah, and if for some reason you can't use the app, just go down to your local library. They have movies that you rent for free, like a book, and then you return it. Some libraries in this country, they will deliver books and movies to your door, and then you put it in a bag and tell them when you're done, and they'll come pick it up.
Yeah.
So, seriously.
You can do that here in Orange County in Florida.
I mean, this is Nerdy Show. Be a nerd. Be a fucking nerd.
Yeah,
for once in your life, get your library card, and I shit you not, worlds will open to you, not just in the traditional bookworm sense.
Libraries are heaven, and I very recently, based on some research we did for Willow, went back to the library at the University of Central Florida, where I spent a lot of time doing research when I was in college there. And it used to be a technical college, and there are so many unusual books. And I can't wait to go back there. And for those of you who are fans of the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program, when we get to the series that I'm going to be game mastering, oh, it's going to get very intense, and it's going to be extremely researched. So, libraries rule.
Dogs drool. Sorry, Homeward Bound is just still baked in my brain.
That's an interesting problem. Let me, I can unbake that for you. I'll just get a, we'll heat up like some kind of big nail and just kind of stick it up your nose and jiggle it around.
Don't do that. Don Amici and Michael J. Fox were marvelous in that role.
Tony, I'm just saying, if you can't get it out of your head, go down to your local library. You can get the Incredible Journey book, and most likely both Homeward Bound and the Incredible Journey movies, and you could watch and read it all for fucking free.
I have read the Incredible Journey.
Homeward Bound 2.
It is a much more boring film.
Which takes place in San Francisco, I believe.
It does.
I don't think I've ever seen it. I'm not sure.
I have.
You're not missing
much.
It's all
about Chance Falls in Love, and he sings I Left My Heart in San Francisco.
Huh.
That's all I remember about that movie.
You can rent All Dogs Go to Heaven 2. Maybe they even collected the animated series. Who knows? Either way, it's garbage, but maybe you want to eat garbage like a dog. Who knows?
Or, you know, look for classic literature and films that are
easily
available.
Or watch A Stranger.
Yeah, or it's all on the same shelf. Just, you know, whatever. It's up to you. It's your life.
Weird thing about All Dogs Go to Heaven 2. I thought at first that it was in... Because I was an idiot. I thought it was intrinsically better because it was Charlie Sheen playing Charlie and they had the same name, so that meant that was what was supposed to happen.
You dumbass.
I ain't never seen that.
It's not great.
Let me...
Still had Dom DeLuise. I mean, the movie starts with Dom DeLuise's character dying.
Ugh.
So he gets to be with Charlie again.
I can't do it. Sorry. No, one dog dying's enough. I can't do another one.
They figured, we can't just have Charlie keep coming back, so now we have to have all of the characters.
His name is Itchy, right? Dom DeLuise's character?
Itchy. So Itchy dies, goes to heaven, they have to go back and help another kid.
Is that really pretty angel dog still there?
Yes.
Cool, I liked
her. And then, what was the villainous dog again? Help me out here. Carface.
Carface. What a great name.
Carface dies as well.
And the devil conscripts him, right?
Sells his soul to Satan, who is a cat.
Uh-huh.
And I remember the moment where he's sitting there laughing at the end of the movie, like, they've all succeeded, the good guys are about to go back up to heaven, and Carface is sitting there laughing because, you know, stupid cat, he gave me everything I wanted, and all I had to do was give him my shoe. Dogs don't even wear shoes. Ha 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 ha. And all of a sudden, this deep, resonant voice, you fool, it was your soul.
That's not a good joke. That's a really fucking bad... That's bad. That's really fucking bad. Even by All Dogs Go to Heaven standards.
And then Carface gets dragged down to hell.
Huh.
That was about how that movie ended. It was not great.
So not all dogs go to heaven.
Well, they do until you sell your soul to Satan.
Until you sell your shoe to Satan. Those words totally sound the same. I don't know if I should be talking about this, but here's a project that Lefty Lucy and I want to work on. So maybe get hyped for it or help us do it. There's a Patreon exclusive perk that I think is at the $5 or more tier. It might be at $1. I think it's $5 though. Where Lefty and I were hanging out together in person for a change like a year ago, and watched All Dogs Go to Heaven and Rockadoodle back to back. I had like an impromptu Don Bluth night, drank a bunch of hot cocoa and watched Don Bluth. And then we just got so absorbed in the weird world of Don Bluth films that we did a whole episode about it that was Patreon exclusive. But we had this crazy idea of the music in All Dogs Go to Heaven fucking sucks. It's terrible. But there's some aspects, like the film's really well.
But let's make music together. Ugh. Let's make sweet harmony.
But it's Don Bluth though. It's gorgeous animation. The effects are incredible. And it also takes place in New Orleans, Lefty's current home. It's weird. The story itself doesn't reference the character. It doesn't play the whole location as character card in terms of how it's written. Except that the backgrounds, the scenes where all the things are happening, are very much embedded in the culture of New Orleans. And then there's also things like the inexplicable drag queen alligator. There's
big-lipped alligator moments.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I couldn't remember the exact internet phraseology about the alligator.
Yep.
But here's what we want to do. We want to create a live presentation that completely redoes the film with all new songs and a live vocal performance.
Oh, Jesus.
And we're pretty fucking serious about it.
Well, best of luck.
Yeah, I know, right? That may someday be a Nerdy Show co-production. Keep your eyes peeled. It's going to take a while. We got bigger fish to fry. But it's in our ever-growing docket of projects.
I guess that's my turn then. It's been a while since the last time I was on. You can tell because I have grown a beard that you can't see, but you can hear in the way I talk.
Here, let's rub. That's the sound of Tony's beard.
Scruffly.
I don't know what that sounded like, and if it was terrible, I'm sorry.
I'm not. That's good bearded. That's good quality bearding.
I mean, this is the power of doing a podcast on a cell phone in a car, is that I can rub it on the driver's face, which is totally safe.
Absolutely. Outside of that, I've been creating life with my wife.
Oh yeah, you put your diggling in her hoo hoo cha cha and and shot some milk out.
Whoa, okay, that was too much. Ding-a-ling and cha-cha, hoo-cha-cha.
You know, it's funny.
Those were at least clinical words.
The OBGYN used the same descriptors as they were explaining what's coming because I am going to have a kid. I'm going to be a dad. Stacy is in the second trimester now. We're expecting her first child back in May. Or coming.
The time traveling baby.
it's temporarily confused. But yeah, we'll find out the sex of the baby at the end of this month. We are very excited. I cannot wait to have a reason to know as many dad jokes as I do. And
this will be really validating for you, Tony.
It will actually in a lot of ways. It's what I have been building for many years.
But you should brace yourself though, because while this child will congratulate you for a good long while and you'll become emotionally dependent on that child's congratulations of your behavior.
Hey Kev, let's not go into the soul crushing aspect of what's
going on. They will turn against you, Tony.
They might not, Cap!
I really hope they don't. It's not a guarantee, and it's a terrible trope to enforce, but...
And yet you want to play into my anxieties. Thank you. My hair is falling out as you speak. So that's cool. Life happenings in Tony Town. Pop culture-wise, I indulged in all of Season 3 of Daredevil. It's fucking fantastic. There is an 11-minute fight sequence that was actually shot in one continuous take. It is absurd. And Charlie Cox even did a lot of the stunts for it. I highly recommend you guys, if you have the opportunity, watch that episode. It's fucking, at least watch up to that episode. It's fucking great. I've been taking in a little bit of Hilda on Netflix, which is a new animated show that's there.
I've heard good to mixed things.
It is good to mixed in my experience with it so far. And I, like so many others, have been losing myself in the Wild West in Red Dead Redemption 2.
Well, shoot, boy, you killed any horses?
I have not.
You got to put them down to break their legs.
Let me put it this way. None of my horses have died.
Well, good for you, son. Good for you. God bless you.
I have killed other horses.
Well, Jim the Cricket, is that nice?
You're just a monster.
That's what they call me as I'm roaming the plains. Tony the Monster.
There is very little I can say that others haven't already. It is outrageous. The level of detail in this game is staggering. And holy fucking shit. Just in general, holy fucking shit. It is so good.
Okay, we'll put that on the box. Holy fucking shit, this is so good. Tony Baldini Nerdy Show.
I mean, that's a ringing endorsement.
It is.
I've been keeping up with some fun news. Netflix has a bunch of new shows that are coming out, one of which is helmed by Craig McCracken of Powerpuff Girls and Wander Over Yonder and Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends fame.
Which I saw this announcement, but which one is that? It was wrapped up in a bunch of other announcements.
It's the kid with the garbage truck.
Kid with the garbage truck. I don't even know if I read about that one. There was something about like there was a Mayan themed animated film that's coming to Netflix soon that sounded fantastic.
I didn't see that, but I did see the Pacific Rim.
Yep.
Very excited for that. Have no idea what it's going to be.
Oh, yeah. I should add, another panel I did at North Carolina Comic Con was an animation panel with Tommy Lee Edwards and Sean Crystal and Jim Mahfood. It was really great. There's a lot I could say about it, but I will say that I saw some concept art from a Pacific Rim animated series that is not this animated series that was canceled when the film was postponed the first time. Pacific Rim 2, that is. They were developing an animated series that was not... This one's like an anime, right? Like a straight-up anime?
I believe so.
This was not that. This was a very, like... It's the film, and it's just as gritty, but it's animated. Very overseen by Guillermo del Toro to a degree, and it got canned along with a lot of other plans when production was initially delayed for the second film. And it's just amazing how much material gets built for projects that never happen. It really is. And it's wonderful that we can have conventions where...
We still get to have those things come out.
Yeah, we get to see aspects of them we wouldn't anticipate. And I hope that someone someday is able to do the same thing with the Willow animated series that Doug and I showed art from because the internet has that art. Animated series based on the George Lucas film Willow. But, you know, there's a lot we don't know about that project. I'd love to know more. I hope we get that someday and then we can also bring that to the floor. As for me, since the last episode, I've been... working nonstop on Call of Cthulhu, working nonstop on a project for a Consequence podcast network called The Opus, which is coming out later this week if everything goes according to plan, and prepping to leave for North Carolina Comic Con. So I haven't done much of anything. Please go enjoy Call of Cthulhu. It is literally the only thing going on in my life right now, aside from some other stuff that is, it's important, but... It's not
Call of Cthulhu important.
It's not as important to me.
You said it was one of the hardest things you've ever had to do for the network.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, it's the most complex project we've ever done. I mean, which was true of the last one at the time. But this one has just stepped up so much further with, you know, hiring actors to do the NPCs and all that. I mean, look, I'm always curious to know everyone's thoughts on the project. Some folks, I know that they would like more actual play. These are not comments that we've had about this program. But, like, I know that there's typically two listeners to the kinds of content we have. There's the folks who want the RPG actual play experience, and there's the folks who want the audio drama experience. And throughout our careers creating these hybrid RPG audio dramas from Dungeons & Doritos to Pokeballs of Steelix and onward, and Ghostbusters Resurrection, of course, it's been a little difficult to find a union there.
To strike a balance between the two that satisfies both beasts.
Well, yeah, because there's two audiences. And we have been gifted with our fan base at Nerdy Show to have an audience that does adore this hybrid of the two of them. But it wasn't until the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program, and to a lesser extent Ghostbusters, but Ghostbusters has been carried aloft by the Ghostbusters fandom. They don't necessarily have a relationship with either genre. They just like that it's a Ghostbusters story. But this one, with the first series of Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program, we were able to bridge that gap further. And what I wanted to do with this one was to bridge it even further. I spoke to a friend of mine who just checked out Call of Cthulhu recently and started with Series 1, doesn't have a background in role-playing, and was kind of lost in the first episode, like, in terms of, like, connecting with it. And what I hope I've inadvertently done with Series 2 is to bridge things so much so that he would be able to connect with it the you know, the roles are still there. The role-playing component of it is still extremely intense. But at the same time, the audio drama part is also so intense that it is a full merger that can be respectful to both genres in a way that's never been seen before. That's my hope. That's what I'm trying for. And I mean, hey, if you want pure actual play, there's a lot of other shows that do that. I mean, Colin's doing sound design for this show, and he asked me, I'll turn in 17 page scripts of added content or rereads and stuff. And he's like, are you sure you don't want to just script this show? But it's just not the same. Like, the improvisation and us collaborating collectively as players to build a story with Luke or Keeper to make something, it's greater than any of us. So then when I'm able to step in, improve lines, change context around, clean a scene up so it's a little less complicated and plays better and we don't waste too many times on truly useless and unrewarding, not even comedically red herring, alternate paths, to tighten it up, to tell the best story possible, to pull in wonderful actors who can match or even work beyond our performance to uplift and enhance everything. I don't think I've gone overboard. I don't think I'm wasting my time and others' time. I'm hoping that I'm making something that is far greater. Like, all these parts disconnected wouldn't matter, but putting all this care into it will create something that is truly unique and special in a way that will make a lasting difference, because this is the direction that I want to take our entire network in terms of where our focal point is going forward. Our tabletop role-playing shows / audio dramas have always mutually been the content people love the most. I want to invest myself in that, and I love collaborative writing, so I want to do this. I want to continue to develop this hybrid format that we've pioneered, you know, for so long, and see how far I can take it. And hopefully, I won't be wasting my time.
At the risk of throwing out yet another strange metaphor that may not land, listening to season 2, which I really had no part of, I did a small bit looped line on the first episode, but I know nothing of where the story is going. It's a surprise to me as I'm listening to it.
And you've heard three episodes.
I've heard three episodes. Listening to it, it's not a straight actual play like the first season was, or like many other shows are, and it's not a straight audio drama. So the closest thing that I can like equate it to would be, it's like you are standing in the holodeck of the Enterprise as other people are running a program and you're just observing. Because it fades in and out of pure story and out of character moments that where characters, like the players, would have an aside joke to each other, but yet the scene continues on. It's so hard to explain, but I totally dig it. And it's like, once you're in the groove of it, like along with the players, when they step out of character for a brief moment to make a joke and then go right back into it, it's not jarring. It just continues the story. So, I don't know. I'm really looking forward to the rest of it, if my endorsement means anything.
Thank you, Doug. It really means a lot. It's like, I can't even begin to explain how long this process has been.
I believe it.
Cap is scaling the mountains of madness.
Spelunking, even.
We'll see. Maybe someday we'll go down that particular path specifically. Not this time, but...
Maybe next crime, Gumshoes.
Maybe so. I have been rereading a lot of my Lovecraft paperbacks from high school to prepare for new adventures. And if everything goes according to plan, we're in pre-production right now for Series 3 already. We hope to record soon, maybe as late as January. Depending on schedules, the end of the year always gets really, you know, difficult, but it's going to be very different again. It's going to be a totally different experience. I mean, if everything goes as we're planning, I'm not going to be playing a character in Season 3 that's not a role-playing character. I'm going to be purely sound designing it. It's not the Cap show, you know, like, I might be writing it, but I don't have to be in it all the time. So I've assembled a cast of people you know from Nerdy Show and people you know from beyond Nerdy Show, and maybe people you don't know at all but are gonna know.
And also Tony was there.
Tony isn't there yet, but Tony will be there someday.
I might just.
You might. I hope so.
Who knows?
That's my hope.
What evil lurks in the hearts of men? But Tony knows.
But like, if you get used to the way things are in this series in terms of like the tone of the story, I think the next one's going to be really, really different, and I'm hoping that's going to be okay. Like, it's still going to be a very scary, I don't know if the show's ever very scary, but like, it's still
going to... No, it was, I will speak from experience. Listening to the first series, especially as things started getting toward the end between the sound design and the fact that these characters' lives were in legitimate peril, I was, like, proper creeped out. Like, just
dope.
Like...
awesome.
Oh, no. Oh, father, grandfather, why? Why did you go into the attic? And then, like, when shit did hit the fan, it was just like, oh, fuck. It's happening.
Yeah.
And it was spectacular.
Cool. Well.
Spectacular. Spider-Man.
I'm about to start scripting the final episodes. I'm in the midst. All right, like I said, I don't know if it's 8 or 9 episodes right now, so I'm about to start, like, figuring that out and getting to, like, the real, like, you know, the pinnacle of things going very wrong. And we'll see. Hopefully I can match the prior series with that, because that did turn out really, really well. But then the next one's going to be different, and the one after that's going to be very different, and the ones that I've been keeping on the side is my plans for, like, Cthulhu stories for a long time for me to tell as a keeper, which is going to be an experiment in and of itself. Those are going to be super different, too. Hopefully the anthology aspect of where we're taking the series will...
continue to play.
Yeah, I hope so. Otherwise, we'll end up with, Halloween 3. But I love Halloween 3, so...
just for different reasons.
Anyway, so I guess that was a good enough aside for me. Cool. Hey, everybody, thanks so much for listening. Hopefully, the car in the car Inception audio didn't distract you too much from your own commute. And
listen, we know that you were essentially just, like, riding in the car with us anyway. This time, it's just literal.
Yeah. Why not? Okay.
We love you long time.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Say bye, Doug.
Oh, bye. I didn't want to... bye.
Say bye, Doug.
Say bye, you motherfucker.
Fucking bitch.
Well, bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.